And welcome into the Friday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharsky, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. We're live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership with a buzz is always about great service. Rex Road out today. PK is in. PK, good morning.
How are you? Good morning, Nashville. How are we doing? Good to be here. Rallying. Got my huge Diet Coke.
Nice. That is a pretty massive Diet Coke you've got there. I respect it. That's good stuff.
I am I'm awaiting an order of my Pure Boost, which is what I try to drink for caffeine, which is significantly healthier than this, but desperate times call for desperate measures.
That's right. They do, no doubt. Ian, how are we doing? What's going on?
Good morning. Happy Friday, everybody.
Do you caffeinate, Ian?
Yeah, I drink coffee. I was going to say, I'm a little bit surprised you're not a coffee guy.
I'm not a coffee guy.
He doesn't like it.
I've had one cup of coffee in my life. It was on a bus to an early game, soccer game, I think, in high school. Disgusted me, and that was that.
That was it.
It's probably too early to try it, but I made my decision at that time.
Well, interesting.
You've made not seen it fit to go back and try it again. That's good.
No, I don't like the smell of it. I don't like the bitterness of it. It's not for me.
I drink it straight black coffee.
I do too here.
I'm not a hot beverage person, really.
Okay.
I like a hot chocolate at the appropriate times.
That makes sense. Rexdro will go through about, 7 coffees per show over there. So he's kind of the extreme of it.
Yeah. I usually bring one and make one more in the kitchen.
Bring one, make one?
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Good stuff. We got a lot going on today on the program. College football playoff begins tonight. We're going to get into that a little bit later in the show. And why there's a couple teams this weekend that I'm pulling for to win by about 70. We'll get into that.
And they probably will win by about 70.
Very well could happen.
I'm rooting for the teams that are going to lose by 70 to win by 70.
We'll see what happens.
But it's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. Obviously, we got a lot of Titan stuff to get into with PK as well. We'll have Pickskin Pick'em later in the show. All that coming up. What a game last night between the Rams and the Seahawks. It looked like the Rams were getting ready to run away with it. Sam Darnold threw a couple of back-breaking interceptions, and it looked like maybe the same old story with Darnold, who's played really well all year for the Seahawks, but for whatever reason, over his career the last couple of years, has not been able to figure out the Rams. And then obviously last year with Minnesota, and had some crucial turnovers in a big moment against the Rams. But Seattle hangs in there. There's a crazy 2-point conversion play that ends up happening. They get to overtime. The Rams score a touchdown in overtime on like a 46-yarder to Puka Nacua. The Seahawks come back, score a touchdown. They go for two. They get the win. So two 11-3 teams heading into it, two of maybe the two best teams in the NFC. And Seattle pulls it out last night to get to 12-3, PK. That is a classic Thursday night football matchup last night.
I felt really good about Seattle coming into this game. About 2 weeks ago, I was looking at point spreads on one of the betting apps because I make picks weekly on my pod, which has taken a bad downturn. but I was looking at Super Bowl odds and it's a really wide open year, obviously. And I put a couple bucks on Seattle. I really liked Seattle when they were here. I think they're well coached. I think, it's not like you can cross teams off for their quarterbacks the way you have been able to in the past. And I think that team can win with Darnold. In a way, I haven't had confidence in him before. And now as the number one seed, if they could hold on to it, I mean, the number one seed doesn't always serve teams well, but it certainly tells you about the regular season that they've had. And I think that they've got as reasonable a chance as anybody. I mean, they're super well coached, can win in multiple ways, defensively challenging. And I think most people thought maybe the Rams were the top team coming into the whole thing. Like if you started a playoff, going into this week, people would have taken the Rams as the number one team, and they just knocked them off in nice fashion with an accidental 2-point conversion and then a very purposeful 2-point conversion. So I feel good about Seattle in the NFC. I do. Tampa Bay was my team before the season, and they're not doing it. I feel like both conferences are really wide open.
It's wide open.
We talked about this a little bit on Wednesday. I've been surprised by the degree of lament over the Chiefs falling out of it when so many people had Kansas City jet lag, and were sick of the Chiefs. And then when the Chiefs get eliminated, there's this big like funeral. Oh my God, what are we going to do without the Chiefs in the playoffs? Yeah, we're going to see other teams.
Yeah, I think we're going to be okay.
It's going to be fun.
I think we're going to be okay. Like, the NFC's wide open. The AFC is as wide open as I can remember it. I mean, it does feel to me in the AFC that if Buffalo's not going to do it this year, like, when is Buffalo going to do it? It kind of feels that way. In the NFC, you've got the Seahawks and the Rams. Now, it is worth pointing out that Devontae Adams didn't play last night with his hamstring, so we'll see much of an issue that's going to be.
They get a lot better with him, particularly in the red zone.
Right. He's going to be back at some point here. And Nacua had 12 catches for 225 yards and two touchdowns last night on 16 targets.
With a dumb tweet.
Yeah.
Quickly erased tweet.
Sean McVay not very happy about that after the game. So those two, I would say, are probably the best teams in the NFC. Packers-Bears is this weekend. It's going to be a huge game in the NFC to see, who's going to end up winning the North. Does Detroit hang on? Like, there's some we were talking before the show. It's a pretty good weekend in the NFL.
Have some fortunate scheduling.
Yeah, like Steelers-Lions is a huge game. It's Ravens-Patriots on Sunday Night Football. Packers Bears on Saturday night. You just had that
Monday
one last
night.
Monday night
might be horrible.
Yeah, Monday night is San Francisco and Indianapolis.
Colts. Oh no, that's good.
Not bad.
That's good.
Watch a little bit more Phillip Rivers out there slinging it around. So it's a pretty good weekend in the NFL.
I tell you, I was really impressed by San Francisco. Also, I mean, that division is presenting some good football.
Well, and it's also, we had this discussion before the year. Last year it was the North in the NFC where you had, the Lions at 15-2. You had, I think, Minnesota was 14-3 or whatever they were last year, and the Packers were like 11-6. And it's like, well, you got three teams that are all in double-digit wins. You got the winner of, like, the NFC South hosting a playoff game at that point. And that's why the discussion came up this last year of, well, do you really need to reward a division winner with a home playoff game, or do you just straight seed the playoffs? And with the NFC West being what it is, you're going to have, whether it's Seattle or L.A. win this division, they're going to end up with, 13, 14 wins, whichever one wins it. The second place finisher is probably going to have 12, 13 wins. And then there's San Francisco, who I think is going to finish third. They may end up with like 12 wins in this thing, too. It's pretty wild. 2 years in a row in the NFC, there's one division that is just absolutely stacked on that side of it.
And I try not to overjudge what I see based on, what the Titans do, because they're not very good, obviously. But, Brock Purdy, I think I tend to underrate. He was slinging the ball out there. He had a better arm than I thought, and his creativity is pretty damn good. I think if you look too at the NFC standings, the way you're talking about, Rams, Seahawks, 49ers, all 10 wins or better. And then you go to the NFC South, Bucks, Carolina, 7 wins each.
Yeah.
Divisional imbalance, NFC East, 9 wins, and then Dallas, Washington, 6-4, it's just kind of an anomaly the way it's going now. But if you happen to draw the wrong division in your scheduling, the way the Titans have this year, to play the NFC West, where you've got 11 wins, 10 wins, 3 wins, you're getting buried. And it's super challenging, and it's lucky for them. They beat Arizona with a guy dropping the ball running into the end zone to beat a 3-11 team. Otherwise, you would have dropped that one. But those are three high-quality teams. And I wouldn't be surprised to see any one of those teams go to the Super Bowl, would you?
No, I wouldn't. And it's Yeah, maybe San Francisco, just because like I don't think they've got a very good pass rush. And I think at some point that's probably going to be a problem.
Yeah, they don't have any pass rush, really.
Right. But, like, I mean, their offense, and I realize it was the Titans last week, but their offense under Shanahan, I mean, there's a certain baseline of what they're going to be. When they're healthy, they're going to be pretty good. So, you know, I think that they've, you know, depending on it, all, it's all about matchups, right? And that's the other thing about this weekend. Now, there's a chance that we could know basically the seven teams that are going to be in the playoffs from both sides by weekend's end. Like, you know, the seven teams in the NFC that are in right now, you've got the Panthers and the Buccaneers. Somebody's going to have to win the division. So we're not going to know that this weekend, although they do play each other. So that's a
– They play each other twice.
That's a big deal coming up.
In the last 3 weeks.
Which is amazing that the schedule has gotten to that point. But, you know, if Detroit loses to Pittsburgh, they're going to be out in the NFC. And then the AFC, you know, Baltimore's got a huge game against the Patriots. If they lose that one, they're in big trouble. And then the Colts, if they lose to San Francisco, and especially if that's combined with a Houston win this weekend, I mean, they're screwed in the race here. So as wide open as it is, we could basically know what the seven teams, barring the division winner of like the NFC South,
or the
is
AFC
going
South.
To be.
On the other side, the AFC South is up in the air that way.
Right, but they'll both at least probably be in.
Yeah, same for AFC North, you know, Pittsburgh or Baltimore, but they're both going to be in. Denver probably wins the West, but Denver and the Chargers are probably going to be in. The thing in the NFC, to get back to that, the teams that are like the Packers probably get in, but the Packers are down because Micah Parsons is out, right? The 49ers are probably in, but the 49ers' chances are down because of their defensive injuries. You know, Seattle and L.A. look to be healthier, and that's why they are in the position that they're in, which is typically the story, a battle of attrition, who's done the best. Speaking of which, do you know that I think it's 6 weeks in a row Lamar Jackson has missed at least a practice?
No.
His Wednesday practice, he pretty much just sits out.
He just doesn't do it?
I mean, but like this week, I think he had a cold.
Illness.
This guy is ill more than anybody in the league, seriously. For a quarterback to miss as much practice as he misses with illness, not an ankle, not a knee.
Yeah, maybe someday illness. You could be like me and get gout.
Yeah.
Not gout.
No gout. No gout involved for Lamar Jackson.
I mean, we've talked about the Bills needing to take advantage. Well, the Bills have gotten to 10-4. Yep. I mean, they're still contending with the Patriots. They're only a game back, and they've split the season series. But Baltimore to be behind Pittsburgh.
With that roster, yeah.
This is a hugely disappointing season in Baltimore. For in the year where the Chiefs disappear, the Bills are at least, you know, poised to get in the playoffs and do their thing. Baltimore could conceivably still miss the playoffs, but they probably get in, but they're not getting in with a bunch of home field and all of that.
No.
Huge disappointment. And I know injuries played into it, but that's not a good year. That's a wrong time to have a bad year.
Nope. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Off and running today on Robbie and Rex Road. PK is with us for the entire program. Today, we'll take your questions for him on our phone to text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I'll get PK's thoughts on Cam Ward's comments from a couple of days ago that have caused a firestorm coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Paul Kuharski with me on the program today, taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Let's head to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Joe in Nashville to the program. Joe, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Joseph.
Hey guys, good morning. So PK, I have a theory I've been working on. I want you to suss out with me, not Nick, but suss out with me.
Nice.
Is so Clint Kubiak's path is almost identical to Kyle Shanahan's. Like if you look at Mike Shanahan and Gary Kubiak are basically football brothers. They're what the fathers of that offense and like. Kyle was off offensive coordinator in two places for two defensive head coaches. When they hired him from Atlanta in San Francisco, you were like, maybe this is a touch early to be head coach, but like he's probably ready. And Clint Kubiak has been the offensive coordinator for two defensive head coaches, and it could be a hair early. He's 38, and like if you just look, I mean, their path, like look at like all their stops and stuff, almost identical. It's pretty crazy to think about. Thanks, boys. Have a
great
day.
Appreciate it. I think he's going to be on the list.
I like him. I think he's kind of my number two. I will say, in terms of the Shanahan comparison, I mean, Shanahan's dad was a better and more successful coach than Gary Kubiak. And Gary Kubiak was a Shanahan tree guy Shanahan was good enough that he was kind of his own tree.
Yeah.
Though I know he was off of what? Was he? He was on somebody's tree himself, but he was successful enough that he was his own guy.
He created his own
tree. But yeah, there's a little bit to what you're saying, parallels.
He's done a good job up here in Seattle. There's no doubt.
All of these young guys are going to have a feel of it being a little early in that you just don't know for sure. And the one thing I think that the Titans would like is, you know, some experience. But if you're looking for a guy with head coaching experience, the pool is small. You know, you're talking McCarthy and Nagy and Saleh.
Well,
and who else?
Not only is the pool small, but there are flaws with all of them. I mean, I was talking about this yesterday. You know, McCarthy is probably still my number one guy. And it's not because I'm just totally in love with Mike McCarthy. I do think he's shown enough that he is a good coach, objectively. But he's not perfect. I mean, he has some clock management stuff that'll drive you nuts if you're a Titans fan. You know, obviously in the playoffs in Dallas, didn't go very well with Mike McCarthy. So, you know, Saleh, I like. If they ended up hiring Robert Saleh, I'd be fine with it.
McCarthy's 62 also.
Yeah, there's another thing. You know, Saleh I like. But Saleh's record's horrible. Now, you could say it's because it's the Jets, and maybe it is it's the Jets.
The record is what the record is.
But the record is what it is. So, like, not only is the pool limited of guys who have done the job before, but the guys who have done the job before, I mean, there's a mixed bag on what the results have been there, too.
Here's the other thing, just as a spinoff. You know, if they decide that Mike McCarthy is the guy, if they decide that Matt Nagy is the guy, they're going to have to convince us that it's more than just them knowing Mike McCarthy and Matt Nagy.
Yep.
Because hiring either one of those two guys really looks like the easy route.
Yep.
You know? And they're going to sell us on doing an extensive, extensive search. Well, when you do an extensive search and you land on the guy you worked with in Green Bay or the guy you worked with in Kansas City, it's going to be hard to convince us that it's an extensive, extensive search. Because what do you usually get out of an extensive search, or what do you like to get out of an extensive search is, hey, you know, McCarthy and Nagy looked pretty good. But when we sat down with this guy, he really steered us in a different direction. And we were surprised and impressed. And, you know, when he talked about scouting and when he talked about player development and when he talked about game planning, we were bowled over. And then we talked to some people who knew him, and the things they said were beyond things people were saying about other people. And it became clear to us that this was the guy, and we fell in love, and it became apparent. You listen to the Mike McDonald story with John Schneider, and you know, I read about this lately with the, you know, they had a hug at a Starbucks, and it became apparent very quickly that this was a marriage that was meant to be. You know, I don't know. I want a story like that.
Well,
some of those stories I know go sideways.
Well, the other part of that too is, you know, let's say it's McCarthy at the end of it. Everything you just said will come up. And it's also the fact that they've had like months to work on this at this point, right? Like usually your extensive searches or within the span of a couple of weeks. I mean, they've been, I would assume, behind the scenes preparing for the coaching search for several weeks at this point. So if you do all that and you end up with Mike McCarthy, look, it may be the right guy to hire. I have no idea. But that will be, there definitely will be some of that in terms of the reaction that they're dealing
with. It'll come from me. Look, when you get to this moment, and you're sitting in my chair or our chairs, I think our obligation is, you know, clean slate for the new guy.
Yep.
But certainly you'll ask those questions. Same thing with, you know, whether you were into Cam Ward or not, once they take him, then you're like, all right, well, let's see what he can do. But I think if they end up with one of those two guys, they're big connected guys, you can't help but think, well, here we go with the old boy network thing as opposed to the expansive, let's find somebody kind of.
Turning over every stone. Yep. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll continue the discussion on the coaching search. We will get PK's thoughts on Cam Ward's comments coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. PK, a lot of conversation the last couple of days on Cam Ward and his comments on the Titans coaching search. We talked about it on the show yesterday of him wanting to have some involvement and meet all the guys involved with the interview process and all those things. And PK, as with anything, Cam Ward led to a divided discussion. There are some Titans fans that look at it and say, well, yeah, I mean, he should be involved in the whole thing. I mean, they should basically ask him who they want him to hire at that point. And then there's the extreme the other way of, you know, what the world has Cam Ward done to warrant being involved in any part of a coaching search for the Tennessee Titans? So you were there when Cam Ward talked about this. What was your takeaway from what Cam Ward had to say on the Titans coaching search front and his involvement in it?
Well, let's contextualize first how this came up. The start of it was I asked him, I said, you know, I know you've got 3 games left, but it's not going to be long before you meet the new coach of this franchise. You know, are you kind of getting anxious for that given how important this guy's going to be to your career? And he kind of jumped ahead. And then there were some follow-up questions, but that got him to the, I'd like to meet all of these guys.
Yeah,
I think people really extrapolated to this idea that like he's going to influence who's hired. If they have 13 guys in, I doubt that he's going to meet all 13 guys, unless you know he's in the building. If he happens to be in the building and they're around, they'd probably say hello. But I do think, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with particularly the finalists having a brief conversation with Cam Ward. Here's a secret. They're all going to like each other.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
the coaches are coming here. They're all going to like Cam Ward and have a big plan for Cam Ward. And Cam Ward's going to be enthusiastic about anybody who's coming here who's got a great plan for him. It's pretty basic NFL working that way. He's not going to have a huge influence over who's hired. Now, the guy getting hired and how he talks about Cam Ward is going to be influential, like it or not. That's how the league works. He's also, if Cam Ward doesn't pan out, going to have a chance with the second quarterback here. But people just made far too big a deal out of it. And this idea that, he needs to be quiet and play football is this very narrow-minded thing. Like a guy can't do 2 things at once. Also, there will be no football being played when the coach is being interviewed.
That is true.
And Cam Ward will be completely able to do the working out that he needs to do and have lunch with the prospective head coach all in the same day without some huge distraction.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's that big a deal. I would say Jeffrey Simmons, if he's around, would have the same level of conversation with the guy as well.
Yeah, I mean, I said yesterday I don't think that him having a conversation with coaches is that big of a deal. I don't think that I don't think that ultimately it's going to play that big of a role in what they do. Now, you know, obviously that led into a discussion of should it play a bigger role and how much say should he have. And there's, you know, all different thoughts all over the map on that one. I want the general manager hiring the head coach. The general manager, I think, is going to be the one hiring the head coach here. That's what needs to happen on this front. And we talked with this a little bit with Charles Robinson yesterday. Like, quarterbacks in general, even your veteran quarterbacks, like with the exception of he brought up, I think, Peyton Manning with Jim Caldwell back in the day with the Colts. At that point, I think Manning had won a Super Bowl and was the league MVP maybe already three times at that point. So, yeah, I would probably involve Peyton Manning in my decision-making there. I know at different points Aaron Rodgers was involved in decisions that they made in Green Bay. So those type of guys, yeah, I mean, you might see them get a little bit more hands-on. By and large, as Charles brought up yesterday, guys like Cam Ward, you know, the most recent examples I think would be Caleb Williams in Chicago, Bryce Young in Carolina. Like, they basically keep them updated on what's going on, but there's no direct involvement in terms of who they hire and who they don't hire, and I don't think that's going to happen here with the Titans either.
Not rubber stamping. Right. It's kind of a, hey, yeah, I enjoyed meeting him. I'd be fired up to work with him. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
What's he going to say? Oh, man, you know. Well, it was a rough lunch we had, Mike. I can't see it.
And that's what I was trying to get home yesterday on this conversation. Like, everybody was talking about input. It's like, well, Cam Ward should have input. It's like, well, what does that mean? Like, what does input mean? Because, like, if they've narrowed it down to, like, the finalists, do we think Cam Ward's walking in the door and be like, hey, Mike, you know, I really don't like Robert Saleh. Let's try to avoid that. And then they're just going to totally switch what they're doing at head coach. Like, I think input in this conversation is something that sounds nice that really doesn't have a whole lot of meaning that's attached to it.
And what's missed is Cam Ward in the course of that said, I'm confident they're going to pick the right guy, right, be it offensive or defensive side of the ball, all of that. He said the corporate stuff. He expressed the confidence in Borgonzi. Bigger question here, bigger fear, bigger thing that everybody should be worried about. What's Amy's involvement here?
That's the main thing, right?
I think that's what we all want to know. And the strong-willed Mike Vrabel type, is she willing to allow them? Will she sign off on that kind of guy if that's the kind of guy they wind up with? You know, they say they're open to everything. They go in and they're open to everything. Well, are they open to everything? Or if they land on a guy like that, is she fearful of that? Because she wants a coach that's more of a, for lack of a better phrase, and this is too strong of a word, a more pushover type.
Yeah.
Somebody that she can ultimately have under her thumb, as opposed to somebody like Mike Vrabel that when push comes to shove isn't going to put up with it, especially once he establishes a successful resume. That needs to be a non-factor here.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike Vrabel respected the role of the owner, but when things got to a bad point, I think he wasn't afraid to express it. And that's what she needs.
No,
I mean, at the end, it maybe got a little bit mutinous,
right,
but he knew the end was there, right? Also, that's a six-year run, and six-year runs are pretty long in the NFL.
You said the day after Brian Callahan got fired that this needs to be a search where they hand the reins to Mike Borgonzi and let him make the hire and do his thing. And I think that's exactly the way this needs to go. And it doesn't mean that, you know, Amy Adams Strunk can't check in. It doesn't mean that you can't keep your quarterback, you know, aware of what's going on out there. But at the end of the day, what you said the day after Callahan was fired is the way this needs to go down. Mike, we've hired you to be the general manager. As owner of this team and Amy Adams Strunk, I'm going to trust you to do the job. Yeah, I'll meet the coach before we end up signing the contract, but bring me your guy, and that's what we'll do. Now, is it going to play out that way? I have no idea, but that's the way that I would feel best about if I'm a Titans fan.
Yeah, I think that's the dream scenario. I think the actual scenario, and look, I don't have a problem with Brinker being semi-involved. My thing, I don't think it's avoidable. And my thing is, I think Brinker ultimately wants the decision to be on somebody else. It takes away his
culpability.
Accountability. Yeah. Culpability, yeah. The thing is, I think when given a chance to make the big move, Amy can't resist. And Bryce Wasserman probably has some say in there too, at least in terms of signing off. They can't resist. I mean, if you're going to own it and you don't do that stuff, what do you do? You know, it's like a shiny new piece of jewelry or a new car or a new horse for her, right? She gets to show it off.
Yeah.
And she might even, you know, she'll show up at the press conference and read off a piece of paper and sit in the front row, and that's her shining moment. So that's the strain here. Now, these people, they use the word empowered a lot.
Yep.
She's empowered Brinker and Nihil to speak for her. Well, if they can speak for you, you're capable of empowering them to do more than that. And speaking for you hasn't been the greatest. So if you want to empower them for more important stuff. Empower them, not Nihil here, I'm talking Brinker and Borgonzi. You've empowered Brinker to speak for you and to run the football side. Now let Brinker do what he should do in terms of empowerment and empower his GM to hire the coach that he's going to work with to rebuild this organization. You, if you're doing empowerment, do it.
Yeah. No, I think it's well said. Let's head back to our phone line. Welcome in Ed in New Jersey to the program. Ed, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, good morning, guys. If I don't get a chance to talk to you next week, happy holidays, Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
I want to, you know, just piggybacking on your point. Do you think it's an advantage to have as many former GMs? That's a large front office. And I can see an advantage on one hand where each one of those guys has an extensive network they can reach out to learn about candidates, even if they didn't directly work with them. But, man, in my professional career, 35 years, anytime you put more than three people in a room, it is hard to gain consensus and hard to make a final decision. So I wonder, in this case, does the pro outweigh the con there? I'm just wondering your opinion. I get your point about empowering Brinker, but he's got to navigate not just Amy, but a lot of or empowering Borgonzi, but he's got to make a lot of decisions.
Yeah.
You know, it ultimately is going to fall on him. He's got to navigate a lot of opinions. So I wonder what your opinion on that is.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I think it's too many cooks. Maybe it becomes a little bit of a hive mentality. If I... From my experience watching this organization, what's happened from, you know, 2 years in of Robinson since is the minimization of the scouts who are on the ground and supposed to be getting you real information and giving you real opinion that should have sway. That's been minimized. And those guys are largely information gatherers. And then the decisions are made by people who, yeah, have gone to games, but aren't necessarily going to campuses and meeting the secretaries and the janitors and the people on campus who interact with these kids and give you a real sense of what they're really about. And they're made higher up the food chain by guys who watch film and read the sheet that younger scout gives you that doesn't carry as much weight as it should or as it used to. And I'm saying younger kid because I think the Titans have gotten younger there. Those used to be more old, crusty scouts who knew all of those people because they've been on those campuses for 30 years. I think the Titans are top heavy now with these guys. And you've got five people who are all of similar experience. And that's a different, you know, they all have had different experiences, right, but they're at the similar executive levels.
Long as this doesn't result in Brinker getting up there and reminding us how many Super Bowls they've all won at different
he'll
places.
He'll say it again unless he can be advised out of it by
Let's not
PR.
Do that. Let's not do that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll continue the discussion on the Titans, including an emotional Jeffrey Simmons yesterday after practice. We'll get more into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. 1025 The Game, your home for the Liberty Mutual Music City Bowl on Tuesday, December the 30th. Music City Bowl coverage presented by Pickers Vodka and Beyond the Edge Sports Bar. Tennessee taking on Illinois coming up on December the 30th. Looking forward to that matchup. We'll get into some college football here in just a few minutes with the college football playoff officially beginning tonight. So we will get into that to begin the 7 o'clock hour. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Paul Kuharski with me here on the program. PK, an emotional Jeffrey Simmons yesterday after practice. We discussed the incident that took place while the Titans were in San Francisco on Sunday. His house was broken into and his home burglarized. And we talked about this. This has been a thing around the NFL that Joe Burrow has dealt with. I think Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes have dealt with this. There has been a trend over the last couple of years of high-profile NFL players having their homes broken into. And, PK, you were part of this conversation yesterday. Here's a little bit of what Jeffrey Simmons had to say at practice yesterday.
Man, when I pulled up at home, I kind of realized it happened because my garage was open. I mean, and I just go so much into it, you know, no one is, especially it's still under investigation, but I just pulled up at home and I'm like, damn, my garage open. And, you know, a couple of things were missing out of my garage, so that's when I kind of realized things happened. So, you know, of course, I did the steps that I needed to do, you know, contacted Benny and Metro. So, you know, it was alarming. I don't know, man, especially at the time, I didn't know what time they did. I didn't know if they was actually still in the house or not. So, and I went through the steps of, you know, what I supposed to have been did. And like I said, man, it's something I don't want to kind of keep thinking about, because, especially talking about, because it's still one of the things that kind of still sucks. Because I didn't expect it. I mean, that's the reason why I do so much work with my foundation, man. Like, you know, especially with our young, our youth. Our youth need us, man, because. I think when we talk about the youth, man, these young boys, they don't have guidance. So that's the reason why I try to be in the community so much. Just never know what, you know, when I go and talk to our youth in these schools, it's like, you can say one thing to these kids that maybe pull them out the streets. Except, sorry, bro. It could have happened to anybody, man. Like, the only thing I think about, man, what if my mom was at the house? So, we know they had guns and, you know, weapons, so that's the only thing I think about, man. So, when we talk about, like, the community work, that's the reason why I said I don't do it for the publicity and the Walter Payton a year. You do it to try to impact somebody's life. So, so yeah, man, it sucks, and, you know, perspective's everything. So it could happen to anybody, man. So my message to my teammates and people around the league to continue to pour in all youth, because when I looked at my camera, they look like young kids. They look like young adults too, that just lost right now. And that's the reason why we gotta continue to use our platform. We gotta continue to use our platform. So that's it, man. Like I said, I'm grateful that none of my family members was in the house and I wasn't there. And like I said, it could happen to anybody, and we have to, especially as professional athletes, take this next step of protecting ourselves and especially where we live. So that's it, man. So
understandably, pretty emotional Jeffrey Simmons yesterday. PK, you were there and a part of that conversation. What did you make of the reaction from Simmons and what he had to say there, kind of his message in the aftermath of obviously a tough situation?
Yeah, well, the two big points, his mom usually watches road games at his house. And for whatever reason, decided not to do that. He took that kind of as a sign. But she kind of somehow knew something bad was going to go down and made other plans. And then obviously he works with a lot of young men trying to keep them out of trouble and was hurt that in this case these were guys that obviously he wasn't involved with and didn't manage to reach, but hopes that outreach to troubled young men by him and others continues to have a bearing and prevent them from doing stuff like this that, you know, potentially hurts people. In this case, you know, or hurt property, but could have far worse consequences. So, you know, issue near and dear to his heart comes back to bite him. So, you know, heartfelt, sincere moment with Jeff, who's had quite a year in terms of playing, and I think quite a year in terms of maturing in the way that he talks to the public and deals with stuff. So it sucks that it happens to anybody, and hopefully Metro PD will find who did this. Be able to get him his stuff back, and you know, people involved will find justice and hopefully some brand of rehabilitation as well, which I think is what he would want.
Yep, well said. 615-737-1025, our phone number. The college football playoff beginning tonight, and I've got a big problem with heading into the first week of the college football playoff that I feel pretty universally around the college football landscape. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5 The Game.